Support for Out in the Bay comes from Comcast, dedicated to serving California communities with access to technology, volunteering time, providing financial support, and connecting people in need to high-speed internet at home. More at california.comcast.com. Hello, and welcome to Out in the Bay, queer radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen. Today, queer communities surviving COVID. As we're all well aware, the COVID-19 pandemic presents unprecedented challenges around the globe, including, of course, in the Bay Area's LGBTQ community. In addition to health risks for hundreds of thousands of LGBTQ people living in the 9 Bay Area counties, including many especially at risk for COVID-related illness, the pandemic and related economic meltdown threatened to overwhelm the capacity of critical queer community nonprofits, from on-the-ground social services to performing arts and other cultural outlets. How are our nonprofits and the people they serve managing through COVID? Here to speak with me about this are a few experts. Roger Doughty is president of San Francisco-based Horizons Foundation, the world's first community foundation of, by, and for LGBTQ people, and which supports scores of Bay Area nonprofits through its grants. In response to the pandemic, Horizons set up its LGBTQ COVID-19 Response Emergency Fund in March. It has already distributed more than $640,000 to 65 nonprofits, with more on the way. Welcome, Roger.
Thank you.
Joe Hawkins is executive director and a co-founder of the Oakland LGBTQ Community Center, which received a Horizons COVID grant to help it distribute food and housing assistance to East Bay residents and has found other sources of support to keep operating. Welcome, Joe.
Thank you. Well, thank you for having me, and thank you to the Horizons Foundation.
More thank you to you, Joe, and everybody else who's doing the actual work.
Barbara Hodgen is executive director of the New Conservatory Theater Center, one of two primarily LGBTQ theater companies in San Francisco. Clearly, ticket sales, a prime source of income, are essentially non-existent, but NCTC has developed other ways to keep some revenue coming in. Welcome, Barbara.
Thank you very much.
A little bit later this half hour, Lorena Hernandez, Comcast California's Community Impact Director, will speak with us about corporate philanthropy during these difficult times. Thank you all for being here on Out in the Bay. So let me start by asking you all, how severe is COVID-19's impact on nonprofits and on the people they serve? Roger Doughty, Horizons Foundation President, I'll start with you, as Horizons supports so many diverse nonprofits. First of all, how severe is this and how does it compare to earlier crises?
I think that this crisis, and I would say crises, may outstrip any other set of crises that our community has faced. It's impossible to do comparisons. But I would put it very high on the severity scale. I think it's very important for us to remember that we're actually dealing with a quadruple crisis right now. We have a national and community reckoning around systemic racism and white supremacy. We have the pandemic, we have the economic collapse you referenced, and we also have a political crisis, which is probably only going to unfold more over the coming months. And when we look at LGBTQ nonprofits and the ones that we have the opportunity to work with, and to support, we see three things going on right now. Number one, we have rocketing demand, especially in those that are directly dealing with disenfranchised communities, marginalized communities, and those that are dealing directly with health. Secondly, nonprofits have this imperative to retool their work. And so all of a sudden, things have had to change from being in person to online, innovative ways of getting new things, retooling programs to become more oriented towards basic needs, et cetera. And then the third thing that nonprofits are wrestling with is the falling revenue, which is very much a reality, whether you look at individual support, you look at corporate support, you look at foundation support. And while there's been some government money in the near term for some organizations, given the state of local, state, and federal budgets, it is inevitable that there are going to be major cuts that are coming on the horizon. And this is compounded by two things. One, many of our organizations are fragile. And two, LGBTQ people, ourselves, are more vulnerable to something like COVID. And I'm happy to expand on that if there's time later on, because that's a very, very important point as well.
So, Roger, tell us about Horizon's COVID-19 Emergency Fund and the breadth of agencies that it supports.
Well, the first thing we decided with the COVID fund, thank you for asking, is that number one, we needed to seed it ourselves. So we used the endowment fund that Horizons has been building for the community. to seed the fund with $200,000. And then we also then aim to pull from multiple different sources. So foundations have supported it, corporations, and many, many individuals have supported it. And we also decided early on that, you know, Horizons itself was not going to charge any fees because this is what we exist to do. So every single dollar went right through to the community. We've made $640,000 of grants to date, and we have about another $250,000 that we will be granting out in August. So the total will be in the neighborhood of $900,000. And the range of those grants is as broad as the community itself. It's all nine counties. It's from helping youth organizations take young people out of dangerous sheltering in place situations where they're actually at risk, from working with and supporting organizations like the Transgender, Gender Variant and Intersex Justice Project, which has been a national leader around Black trans issues, and their work in getting support directly into the hands of people in need and people in prisons, elder-serving organizations, outlying community centers. We've funded 65 organizations. That's been our privilege. And every single one of them is a story of creativity and resilience.
It's incredible, the breadth of organizations that Horizons supports. So thank you for doing all that. Joe Hawkins, Executive Director of Oakland LGBTQ Community Center, I want to turn to you now. Your center helps a lot of people meet basic needs. And one of the grants you got from Horizons was specifically to help with food and housing for folks. So what are you seeing? What effects of this pandemic are either specific to or more severe for LGBTQ people?
Well, I want to start again by thanking the Horizons Foundation for the support that we've received from them. We were given, it was a challenge grant by Citigroup to start an emergency housing rental program here in Oakland for the LGBTQ community. And just to sort of put this in context, in Oakland, African Americans represent about 23% of the population, but they also represent 70% of the homeless. That those in that population, there's a disproportionately high number of queer people who are also represented in that 70% number. And when we talk about how what we're seeing on the ground, we're seeing high rates of homelessness. We're seeing high rates of substance abuse and mental health issues. And what we've been able to do since we have been essential workers from day one, I literally have been writing checks to make sure that people are not evicted, to make sure that they can pay their rent. So we've raised close to $200,000 to provide emergency rental assistance to people. And we partner with local organizations to provide also food assistance, as well as subsidized mental health support. So that's really what we're seeing right now. And there are a lot of young people we're starting to see as of late who have been sort of put out of their homes. You know, people are being forced to stay in their homes with their families in ways like never before. Example, a young man who is 14 years old started being sort of harassed by his family about the behavior, the way he was acting, and calling him effeminate, and he was kicked out, came here to the center for support. We were able to get him in to some temporary housing, but I just don't see that stopping. I think that we're going to see more and more of that. And as more and more youth are unable to school, we don't know when school will start back up, but it's causing a lot of friction in households. So we're doing a lot of counseling with young people.
That's an important point. We're actually working on a segment about just that issue, how so many schools are closed, young people are sheltering at home with families who may not be supportive and just aren't getting the support they need. And that's going to be a problem for a while. Barbara Hodgson, Executive Director of New Conservatory Theater Center, please give us an overview of how your theater and performing arts in general are managing.
Well, I want to start out by saying we are also grateful recipients of a Horizons Emergency Grant that helped keep artists on payroll and helped people pay their rent. So it was very, very much appreciated. We're in a city-owned building, so we actually were shut down. We got a jump start on it. We were shut down about a week before the whole city was, and it basically shut off any ability to make any earned income, obviously, off of like ticket sales and things. We have a terrific education program. So I've got a fabulous conservatory director who pivoted on a dime. We were in the middle of our spring classes. She put everything online. We even moved our summer classes online. So the conservatory has been handling it really well. Our main stage, we're learning all kinds of skills. We've turned some of the programming that we had planned into radio plays. We've created a podcast. We've commissioned a playwright to do a radio play specifically for this situation. So what we're trying to do is keep as many artists working and engaged as possible. I think for us, with the strains that this crisis, and as Roger so aptly put it, all of these crises converging, this really highlights how important it really is to have a place where there's a voice, and we can provide a voice. And eventually, when we can gather again, where we can meet again as a community, come together as a community, and hopefully do that thing that art does better than a lot of things, which is that healing power of art and that cathartic ability of art. And so we're trying to keep our doors open so there will be a place to come together again.
And when we spoke on the phone last week, Barbara, you told me you don't really have any idea when we'll be able to have live theater again or any kind of other gatherings, cultural gatherings. I mean, we think of the arts sometimes as luxuries, but they also are important for people's mental health, just to have a sense of community and some place to go to. And people are feeling so isolated right now. It seems like this timeline just keeps getting longer, farther and farther into the future. Do you have any sense at this point of when folks will feel comfortable coming back into theaters or other community spaces?
Well, we're part of a cohort of theaters that is participating in a research survey of Bay Area theater goers. We're not going to have really big groups of people coming back to the arts, I don't think, until there's a vaccine in place. Large groups of people are just really, I don't think, on the immediate horizon. We won't be live again in 2020. Our best optimism is we may be live again late spring, early summer of 21. But we're in our 39th year. And while a lot of people like to stay at 39 forever, we're very much looking forward to 40. And we just want to stay afloat long enough to get to celebrate the 40th anniversary.
So Barbara, you mentioned that you're able to do online. You've been able to switch some of your classes to online. Joe, when we spoke last week, you mentioned that peer support groups are one of the things that brings people into the Oakland LGBTQ Center, but you can't do those in person anymore. How are the virtual online support groups working?
We have over 30 support groups, peer support groups, and it's different. Some don't do so well online, whereas recovery groups, groups, for example, like we have a group called Black Connect. We have trans feminine, trans masculine. Some of those groups do better than some of the other groups that we've had. Our youth group, it's been harder to get the youth to come together on Zoom regularly. They really liked coming into the center and being a part of youth drop-in. But all groups, with the exception of our recovery-related groups, have shrank in numbers.
Interesting.
But for us, what has increased, though, are individual appointments. We have a sort of isolation room, for lack of a better word. We've created this comfortable room that where we get to meet with people with full PPE And that's usually where we issue the checks for rental assistance or food cards or whatever we're providing people. But we notice that when people come in, that they want to talk because they've been isolated. And we are about to open a queer clinic here in Oakland. It'll be the first of its kind in Oakland. It will focus primarily on the most marginalized communities of African-American, gay, bisexual, and trans people. Although all people will be seen at that clinic, this grant is very specific.
When is the center opening, the clinic?
The clinic portion will open on our three-year anniversary, September 7th.
Fantastic. I wanted to ask you also, Joe, you mentioned when we spoke last week that you are actually busier than ever and you've hired employees during this, since the pandemic started. How have you been able to hire new employees?
Thanks to the San Francisco Foundation, the San Francisco AIDS Foundation, and Gilead, we've been able to hire people in advance of the opening of our clinic. So we have now three case managers. We literally had no paid staff until just recently. So we've been just ramping up towards this new expansion. We signed a lease, a 15-year lease on our space with an option to buy. The goal for us is stability. So we just want people to know that we're not going anywhere. We're here to serve not just their mental health needs or their social needs, but we're also here to serve their clinical health need, whether it be HIV or sexual health or primary medical care. So people will still be able to engage with us through this whole COVID-19 pandemic.
Thank you. Roger Dowdy, I want to go back to you for a minute. Can you talk a little bit more about the breadth of organizations that are getting support specifically through the COVID Emergency Fund? I know that some are small, and it sounds like in some cases people have been able to find some opportunities here and, you know, have new ways of getting some income, and others are just maybe much more decimated. Can you give us a sense of how disparate these experiences are for various nonprofits?
Sure, I'm happy to, and they range wildly. I am ecstatic to hear about experiences like what you're describing, Joe, with actually being able to hire folks. That is wonderful. That is unfortunately not the case across the board. And so the work that we're trying to do through the COVID fund is to help organizations through general operating grants. So we're not tying them to any particular accomplishments. It's just we trust the folks who are running the organizations. And I mentioned a couple of the examples of the types of organizations that we're reaching, but it includes community centers in every part of the Bay Area. It includes groups like API Equality, a queer group that is working, among other things, to make sure that there's opportunity for healing and response around some of the anti-Asian racism that has arisen during the COVID pandemic, including within the queer community. We're supporting groups like Open House and Lavender Seniors in the East Bay and the Curry Senior Center in the Tenderloin to do work directly for elders, for queer elders who are statistically more isolated in general, but during this time, that isolation is, of course, even more compounded. And the data, not just on isolation, but on health outcomes, the high percentage of folks in our community who work in service industries, which are very vulnerable both to economic downturn, as well as in many cases to COVID itself, all make our community extra vulnerable. And we are hoping that we continue to see foundations, corporations, and of course, people in our community itself stepping up to help during this time of so many multiple crises. Our organizations, and that means our community, depend on it.
How can listeners help? And what would you like them to know most of all right now?
There are many, many ways that they can help. And I want folks to know that while we are beset by many, many crises and people truly are suffering and organizations really are struggling, that there's also reason for hope. There's reason for hope that we see in the way that people in our community are responding, in the greater awareness around issues of of racial equity and white supremacy and racial justice. And also, it is in hard times. It is in times when we are pushed to the wall that our community has always shown itself to be at its best. There is every reason to believe that this time can be the time when we shine brightest of all.
Very good. That's inspiring. Thank you for that. Barbara, go ahead.
You don't want me to follow that. We are looking at the silver lining in that keeping people away from the arts for this long, I think, will make people recognize the value of them. We can be viewed sometimes as a luxury item, and I wouldn't be working in this field if I thought that. It's not a luxury, it's a necessity. And I think being deprived of that for a long period of time, I hope will help accent that. And you asked, how can people help? Stay in touch. We're going to be broadcasting. We're going to be out there. You won't see us in person, but we'll be on the airwaves. And we miss our audience. We miss the people. We miss our community. And so if we've got something broadcasting or a podcast or something, we hope people will tune in and listen and stay in touch and let us know what their concerns, what they want to hear, what they want to know.
Well, as a radio person, I'm certainly happy to hear that you're bringing radio dramas back. Yay! Joe Hawkins, any parting thoughts from you?
Yeah, I want to remind people that Black LGBTQ lives matter too. The Oakland LGBTQ Center serves everyone, but we are Black-founded, we are Black-led, and we are people of color-centered. And we often don't get funding. This is nothing new. So when Roger talks about institutionalized racism and systemic racism, it's real. And I think a lot of people are seeing it now. I remember when we first opened the center, a couple of people came here and asked if they could speak to the heads of the organization. And when Jeff and I said, that's us, then they said, no, the people above you. Mm. But that is the mindset. And these were queer people. So I'm used to racism from white queer people. I've been doing this work a long time. And what I really want people to know is to find ways to heal themselves from the racism that they've been indoctrinated with, so that they can really be a part of a multicolored, multi-ethnic queer community here in the Bay Area and beyond.
Very good. Thank you all for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Eric.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
I want to bring in now Lorena Hernandez, Director of Community Impact at Comcast California. Lorena, from your vantage point as a longtime career professional in corporate giving and community involvement, how severe is COVID-19's impact on nonprofits and on the people they serve?
Well, Eric, I've been speaking with many nonprofit leaders who worry about how they're going to continue to sustain the essential programs and services that their organizations are delivering under this, you know, unique environment that we're currently in. You know, there's an all-time high demand on their services. So we're working really closely with these nonprofit partners, you know, and continue to support them in their efforts by not only financial contributions, but then also by really providing connectivity to the clients that they serve. We announced, you know, when back in March that we were offering 2 months free to any new customers who are low income, you know, through our Internet Essentials program. When COVID happened and we went to shelter in place, we also opened up our public Wi-Fi hotspots to everybody, whether you're a Comcast customer or not. That was our way of making sure that everybody was connected, especially during this critical time.
I know that you served previously as vice chair of the California Student Aid Commission, so I know that education is very important to you. The pandemic has brought many challenges for schools and students. How is Comcast helping meet these challenges?
Yes, education is extremely important to me because it was life-changing for me. So I know how it can transform someone's life and moving people out of poverty. When COVID hit, it came to light, brought to light even further the digital divide that was still existed in our communities. And even here in California, that's the epicenter of innovation and technology. We have hundreds of thousands that are still unconnected, and those typically are your low-income communities. And our Internet Essentials program, we launched back in 2011, and it's focused on bridging the digital divide. And the work that we've known through that program is that there's three barriers to the divide. One is the cost of internet. So we started the program at night. It's cost $9.95 per month. The second barrier is lack of access to reasonably priced device. So we've subsidized computers to $149.99. And then the third piece, which is as important as the first two, is digital literacy training. And we invest and provide grants to nonprofit organizations so that they could provide digital literacy training in the community, in language, and in culture to the various communities that are the populations that we're trying to reach. And since we started the program in 2011, you know, we connected 8 million low-income individuals to the internet, and here in California, 1 million. But there's still a divide that exists, and, you know, and COVID amplified that. So we're working closely with school districts, cities, counties, nonprofit organizations to make sure that we connect the unconnected.
That's impressive. Those are impressive numbers. Nationally, I know that Comcast, NBC Universal sponsors Power On.
Yes. You know, digital equity has been, even prior to COVID, one of our primary focus areas. And we partnered with Power On to really support the LGBTQ community, especially low-income LGBTQ individuals, empowering them and educating them with technology skills and the importance of, you know, up-leveling their skills so that they can get, you know, higher paying jobs, and also exposing them to technology if they haven't been. So it's been a great partnership nationally and locally. We work here with Power On's affiliate in Sacramento. We also provided lots of, you know, relief, you know, and response funds that were established across our California footprint. The need is extremely high, at an all-time high, but our focus for the funds, you know, in those relief funds was to support nonprofits and small business owners.
Lorena Hernandez, Comcast California Community Impact Director, thanks so much for joining me here on Out in the Bay.
Thank you.
That's Out in the Bay for this week. I want to thank all of my guests, Barbara Hodgen, Executive Director of New Conservatory Theater Center, Joe Hawkins, Executive Director of Oakland LGBTQ Community Center, Lorena Hernandez, Comcast California Community Impact Director, and Roger Dowdy, Horizons Foundation President. For more information about topics and organizations mentioned today, please see our website, outinthebay.org, where you can also hear this program again, as well as past shows. While you're there, please sign up for our e-news and subscribe to our podcast, outinthebay.org. If you have a question, comment, or suggestion for a future show, you can find us on Facebook and on Twitter and Instagram at OutInTheBaySF, or write to us, OutInTheBaySF@gmail.com. I want to thank my co-producers, True Quinn and Kendra Klang. Big thanks also to KSFP for bringing Out in the Bay back on the air. Our theme music was written and performed by Holly Mead. I'm Eric Jansen. Thanks for listening, and take good care.
Support for Out in the Bay comes from Comcast, dedicated to serving California communities with access to technology, volunteering time, providing financial support, and connecting people in need to high-speed internet at home. More at california.comcast.com.